Per dove? Dai.
Message is being broadcast by the Department of Defense of the Republic. At 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, multiple unidentified objects were confirmed to have entered Earth's atmosphere.
Discovery Houston, 20 seconds to LOS Tedris.
The first message that comes to you is, you are a divine being. You matter. You count. You come from realms of unimaginable power and light, and you will return to those realms.
The vast stretches of the unknown and the unanswered and the unfinished still far outstrip our collective comprehension.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Broadcasting from Forest Tower Studios, all the way from the Deep South. Now, here is your host, Joe Root.
All right, welcome back to Lighting the Void. We're here at the top of the second hour, and we have our guest here with us. We're going to keep the Reverend Dan Lopez here with us as well, too. And we're going to get right into this because I'm a big fan of science, believe it or not, especially when it comes to things like astronomy and stuff like that. So we're going to get into this right now. And our guest is here with us. Dr. Massimo Teodorani is a Northern Italian astrophysicist and obtained his master's degree in astronomy and his PhD in stellar physics at the University of Bologna as a researcher at the Astronomical Observatories of Bologna and Naples. And later, at the INAF Radio Telescope of Medicine, he has been involved in research on many types of explosive stellar phenomena, such as supernova, nova, eruptive protostars, and high-mass close binary stars, and more recently in the search for extrasolar planets and extraterrestrial intelligence within the SETI project. Now, Dr. Teodorani subsequently taught physics as a lecturer at the University of Bologna, Rome, and Torino, and among his varied research interests, there is an active involvement in the study of anomalous aerial phenomena. You can go to his website at MassimoTeodorani.com, and it's really cool to have you on here. Thank you so much for joining us all the way across
the pond. Thank you to you.
Now, I noticed that when I was talking with Dan earlier in the first hour is that I'm not such a guy that believes that everything is UFOs all the time, but I do know this, that there has been a lot of sightings of, let's just say, lights, and I've seen them myself, and especially amber-colored lights, which is extremely, I guess that's the one that gets seen a lot. Is any of this stuff, these lights that we're seeing, first and foremost, can they just be explained by nature, most of these things that we're calling UFOs, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, well, we don't have yet an explanation, but I can assure you that we have carried out observational campaign using instrumentation like magnetometers, telescope spectrometers, several kinds of sensor, using the same philosophy of research as we use in astrophysics, because we have to measure the light, we have to measure electromagnetic radiation that is emitted by these things. And so we thought that the best way to obtain data about this kind of phenomena is to go to some areas of the world where such phenomena occur very often. The most important of them, at least for us, was the Hesdalen Valley in Norway, where we carried out several missions during the summer. Me and then after me, my colleagues of the Radio Telescope of Medicina. I come to your question. We were able to describe the behavior of the phenomenon, but we were not able yet to explain what it causes. But we at least we know the questions that we have to ask, crucial questions, and namely, what kind of energy is able to keep a plasma, namely incandescent gas, practically ions and electrons, what is able to contain such plasma for a very long time in a very restricted space, giving the shape of a light bulb. Clearly, what we saw there is normally is not a structured thing, so it's not a flying saucer or something like that. It looks like a natural phenomenon, very much, but through witnesses that experienced the phenomenon in the valley, there is maybe something more. Maybe this could be due to the electromagnetic radiation that phenomenon in case is able to exert on the brain of the witnesses who might have hallucinations or something that they think, but we don't know yet. We don't know what is the contained mechanism of the plasma, and this is extremely important for the physics, because we could, if we understand that what is the central force that is keeping the plasma self-contained, we could reproduce such a phenomenon in a laboratory. So that it's very important for the energy issue that it's important for our life if we can find an alternative energy. So we continue, we try to continue when we have money funding to make monitoring operations. And now, together with American colleagues of the group led by Dr. Mark Rodegger and other scientists, I have been collaborating with them. I have been collaborating on a project which is called UFO Data. You can find UFO data if you Google it. You can find immediately. And the goal of this group is to build up an automatic measurement station and place it in hot spots of the world in which strange light phenomena occur most often. In the case of UFO data, the prototype of this instrument, which is in advanced state of preparation, it will be deployed mostly in the United States. So it's of great interest for United States, as you, in your big nation, have several hot spots where strange light phenomena occur very often. For instance, such as the Brown Mountain. The Brown Mountain. One is the Marfa, famous Marfa lights. And another one is in the Yakima, another one is Cloverdale. I have been in touch with all these people to try to coordinate actions. Okay, so this we learned something about the behavior of the phenomenon. It's at least in Esdaline. It's like a cluster of light bulbs that split, unite, and they have a great. And they emit a great energy. I measured when I could 20 kilowatt of power in a few seconds. So it's very interesting from the physics point of view. I cannot say more about that in the sense that I don't know more. If I knew, I would tell you. But anyway, my work, together with one of my colleagues, have been published on peer-review journals. And big congresses. So this is what I can tell you so far.
Okay. So then there is no doubt in my mind that you and others that you're working with, your colleagues and people like SETI, are doing everything they can scientifically with the tools that they have to figure out what is going on with this phenomenon that we call UFOs. However, I want to test my intuition here, because I have no idea how you've done your research, most of it. Well, what's going on, I feel, is it having something to do, maybe, with consciousness? Is that possible?
Well, specifically, those recurrent light phenomena do not have to do with the conscience. And so. Maybe it could have to do, but this is something that could be investigated by, psychologists or other kind of scholars, okay? Our goal is just to get physical data from the phenomenon. I can tell you anyway, because I spoke with the witness of the phenomenon, both in Sdalen and also in northern Italy, because something similar happens recurrently in northern Italy, that some people had the impression that looking at those lights were communicating straightly in their mind, sort of telepathy. Clearly, this is not my competence, so I cannot say anything. I believe that these people was sincere. These people didn't want their name is divulged to the general people. They simply they were sincere. Regarding the phenomenon, you ask me, what do we do to make this research? I can tell you, we use normally some high power telescopes when it's possible to use them, because the more you magnify the field of view of the phenomenon, and the more it's possible that the light phenomenon moves, so it's difficult to track it. So it's better to use highly sophisticated video cameras and cameras. But we also used spectrographs, spectral gratings, through which it's possible to analyze the light, namely, which chemical element are producing the light, what is the temperature, what is the pressure, what is the density of the plasma that is producing it. And this is what we normally do in astrophysics. So it's something like an applied astrophysics. We measured also the radio waves above all in two ranges, in a very long wavelength, like VLF, ELF, and in very short wavelength, high frequency, in namely microwaves. We have used radar, we have used magnetometers, and we have tried to use all these instruments simultaneously so that we see if we can establish some kind of correlations. Or so. So to study the phenomenon, we use the same philosophy as we use in astrophysics, only that the light phenomenon is just here. The problem, differently from what happens with celestial objects like stars, is that phenomenon is not, it's moving randomly. So it's difficult, it's very difficult to catch it. It's not like a star with fixed coordinates. We put the coordinates in the computer of the telescope, and we find the star always there. The light phenomenon is moving randomly when it appears. But we have now some particular instruments, such as the multiplexer spectrograph, of which I have a prototype, which was projected by Dr. Romasters, and there is the patent published in internet, which is able to get the spectrum in a very wide field of view. So if the light phenomenon is moving, it catches its light anyway. So it's a genial invention, just to make you an example. Okay. In my opinion, we would like to use also a high-speed video camera, able to get something like between 1 million and 1 billion frames per second, so that we go in deep into the time variability of a phenomenon through which you could understand something. Clearly, we need money for that. And money funding is very little, and most of my colleagues have snubbed this kind of research, unfortunately. Yes, the situation is so, but we continue to make research projects, and when we have money, we go to make missions. Okay, this is what happens regarding this light phenomenon. What happened? You mentioned SETI before. SETI is a totally different thing. where we are aiming our radio telescopes and sometimes also optical telescopes towards stellar candidates where there could be some planets, which we discovered 5,000 exoplanets so far, and some of which could contain life and maybe intelligence. We have tried, and very recently there is even bad news. The news is that Australian scientists, radio astronomer, scanned with the most sophisticated technique with a radio telescope, a wide region of sky containing about 1 million stars, okay, and they found nothing. Unfortunately, we didn't found nothing yet, in spite of the sophistication of our radio telescopes, of our receivers, and spectrum analyzers. So the situation is, for now, clearly regarding. So we have light phenomenon which we don't know what yeah. causes them, and on another side we have a SETI attempt to see if there are other intelligence. There is also a variant of the SETI, which is a search for extraterrestrial visitation, which was an initiative that was proposed by JPL scientist Scott Stride, and also Dr. Eamon Ansbro in Ireland, and also by myself, which is aimed to see if something extraneous has entered inside the solar system, and we do know what we expect to see. Okay, so there is also this initiative, but so far we have no results.
Well, that is so definitely when it comes to the UFO community, not yeah. what we hear a lot, because what happens is, just to be honest with you, is the best experiments yeah. we get as civilians and people that don't have all these tools is night vision, and people look up at night vision and like, well, look, there's a galactic war going on, and really they're just able to see more with the eye, and really most of that stuff is explainable. If you're not finding life or ships out there, and you looked at what you said, 1 million stars or systems, that's a lot. That's kind of makes me feel a little
well,
bit
we
alone.
Have, I can tell you that we have 100 billion galaxies yeah. In the universe, and every galaxy such as ours contains 200 million stars. So the probability to find life, intelligent life, is high, clearly. Mm-hmm. But anyway, very rare. One out of 1 million among the stars could contain life, and yet they would be very many, because we have so many stars. So the possibility to be visited, it does exist.
Right.
Also because there is also theoretical physics work, especially by Einstein and other scientists, especially the field equations of general relativity, that predict that theoretically it's possible to open a wormhole, like we call it, in space-time, so that space travel would be very, very fast, practically a form of teleportation, similar to the movie Stargate, for instance, because the concept is that. The problem is that to open the mouth of a gate of such kind demands a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Energy is extracted from the quantum vacuum. And to make an example, if you want to make a mouse pass through a hole which is 5 inches wide for 30 seconds, you need as much energy as the rest mass of the moon. So we do not have this capability. But maybe someone else has this capability, from a Russian astronomer Kardashev proposed that there are three kinds of civilizations, type 1, type 2, and type 3. Type 1 is a bit more than ours. Well, they are able to use the energy of their planet. Type 2, they're able to use the energy of their stars. So they really are able to tap that energy. And type 3 could be able to use the energy of an entire galaxy, especially the energy that is produced by the central black hole inside the galaxy. So if they are able to extract such an energy, they might open a wormhole, and so that they could arrive also here. Clearly, they would come most favorably here, because this is an inhabited planet, that Earth is very beautiful. It's possible to, there is a lot of life, and so it could would trigger the interest of someone else. So they can come. Of course, they can come. But so far, we do not have any scientific proof that this has happened. Yes, there are many UFO sightings. There are many UFO videos. 95% are hoaxes or misinterpretation of known natural phenomena or man-made phenomena. But there is something that remains unexplained and should trigger the interest of all physical scientists. And as Dr. J. Allen Hynek, famous, was telling, and also Dr. Jacques Vallée, it's important to study this phenomenon, but it's very difficult. So we need, because it's random, okay, we need several automatic measurement stations placed in several areas of the world, and hope and wait and see what happens.
So thank you for explaining that, by the way. I appreciate that. Before we take our break here, in your opinion, is there even an explanation for the fast radio bursts that we keep getting infrequently? I mean, because this is a new phenomenon that's happened recently, right?
True. We know several astrophysical phenomena, for instance, gamma ray bursts, which are highly energetic phenomena, which are caused sometimes by hypernovae, so explosions of supernovae that are 100 times more powerful, but most probably by neutron stars that have some kind of, earthquake on their surface, so they can emit a lot of gamma radiation and maybe also radio radiation. But the fast radio bursts that have been observed so far have not been explained as according to what we know about high energy physical phenomenon in the universe. They have not been explained yet. So the possibility that it's they are artificial is non-zero. So we have to coldly investigate and also be prepared to discover new natural phenomena. For instance, when the pulsars were discovered by Jocelyn Bell Burnell many years ago, everyone started to think, well, this is a message from extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. Instead, we found a new physical phenomenon that regards neutron stars when their rotation axis is misaligned compared to their magnetic axis. So it might happen the same also with fast radio burst, but it could also be that it's something that is not natural. So far, I cannot say anything. We have to wait and to collect many more data and see what comes out statistically from what we see.
Thank you for that. All right. So this is going to be like the shortest break. When we come back, Dr. Teodorani, I want to talk about one of your books, specifically the hyperspace of consciousness.
This is the
shortest break we have. We'll be right back, guys. Stay with us.
Okay.
alchemical tradition of Paracelsus is a medical tradition called Spigeria. Though not many people practice this work today, Phoenix Aurelius has been researching and teaching this work for the last 15 years, and he needs your support.
Hi, I'm Phoenix Aurelius, and I'm the founder of the Phoenix Aurelius Research Society, where I perform modern scientific research on the methods and techniques of Paracelsian alchemy and Spigeria for health, wellness, agriculture, ecology, and more. All my work is 100% funded by the public, so if you like what I'm doing and you want to support my research, please consider making a purchase of Spigeric medicines from my apothecary, fund your own Spigeric IDF wellness research, or participate in my group study or one-on-one immersion courses so that you can learn how to perform this work for yourself. I want to thank you in advance for your support.
Visit thefringe.fm/alchemyresearch and enter coupon code FRINGE and receive 15% off anything and everything on the website. That's thefringe.fm/alchemyresearch. And thank you for doing your part and keeping alchemy alive in the modern day.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
This is Lighting the Void Radio with your host, Joseph Roop.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out. Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
Hi, I'm Dave Cruz, host of the paranormal media show, Beyond the Strange. Over the past 5 years, Beyond the Strange has interviewed numerous witnesses to the paranormal, such as UFO abduction, alien aircraft, ghosts, and spiritual visitations, Bigfoot, and other cryptids. Also, Beyond the Strange has interviewed famous researchers and authors that have shared their experiences of the strange and the bizarre. Visit www.beyondthestrange.com for more information about the show, schedules, guests, and chat. Beyond the Strange airs Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 Eastern, right here on the KTLK Digital Broadcasting Network, The Fringe FM. And remember, always stay strange.
Hi, this is Kronox from Belgium, and you're listening to Lighting the Void with Joe Roop.
Phone dial 1-800-588-0335, toll free from the United States or Canada. You're listening to Lighting the Void Radio.
Speaking about his studies, which are very impressive. And actually, I didn't mention this before. Sorry, I need to turn the volume up here. I didn't mention before that he wrote quite a few books, and most of them are in Italian. But if you go to the website, you can see all the books that he wrote here. But I wanted to ask you, Doctor, the hyperspace of consciousness, this is something that one of the reasons why I believe, and I guess it's maybe I want to believe, but because of my dreams and some of the out-of-body experiences I had, I kind of believe that a lot of this light and UFO phenomena could be caused by consciousness. And I noticed that you wrote a book about that. And what specifically did you, I'm sure you covered many subjects. Well, what was the main kind of theory that you were looking at here in this book?
Yes. Well, first of all, I have to tell, this book is only a speculative book.
Okay.
So it's not even a theory, because we don't have yet data to make a theory from it. But we can speculate if we use imagination and logic. If the speculation is self-consistent, you can do that, which could be, how to say, stimulating for maybe finding something in the near future. Well, I come to the point. I'm very direct. In my life, it has happened that I had strange visions. I have to tell it. I'm not ashamed to tell. Strange visions, which are normally called hypnagogic or hypnopompic visions, that it's possible to have a few minutes before falling asleep and a few minutes after waking up. So for a while, your mind becomes like a high definition screen in which you see visions, images of high clarity in color. They can be they can be faces, human and not human, landscapes, ambience or something, but very, very clear. So there was some part of my life when it was I remember everything started when I was 28. I was working before my PhD, and I started to have these images that were clearly lasting only, not more than 30 seconds, but so clear they were triggering my left brain, so my rational brain. Well, from that time on, I started to elaborate a theory which practically deals with an intelligent universe, a universe that learns from itself all the time. I thought that life in the universe, without recording the experience of the people, of their life, of this means their thoughts, their actions, their emotions, if this is not recorded somewhere, the life process makes no sense. So I thought that there might be a sort of supercomputer which is transferring data non-locally, namely instantaneously through the mechanism of a quantum entanglement, and that our mind is transferring everything, is uploading all the time our thoughts, our emotions, to a sort of server, because it's like internet practically, which collects everything, all the experience of living beings, especially intelligent beings. This kind of information evidently can be downloaded, so you can make the inverse procedure. And now I come to hypnagogic images that happened to me. My hypothesis is that these images, which have nothing to do with what you have been living the day before or something you are experiencing when you are little or something, something completely strange, it's they result from a downloading process, a spontaneous downloading process directly in your mind, which is coming from the experience of other beings in the universe or of other human beings. I think this database is there. I believe it's true, but I cannot demonstrate scientifically yet. You can download all these so-called data through images. And the beauty in this is that these images are not the information per se. The images are not information. Sometimes not only images, but you can download also sounds and smells or something. The images are only icons. It's like the icons of a computer program. When you click twice on it, you activate a program, you trigger something. So I think that these images, these visions, are only icons that trigger mental processes in your brain. It happened to me, because when I started to have these visions, all of a sudden, strange questions were coming to my mind, especially regarding physics, about the principle of conservation of energy, about extraterrestrial intelligence, and I started to elaborate a lot of things. So I think that behind this process, there is a big intelligence, I would say, create a technology, yeah, a non-local technology that could have been created by supernal beings. After all, supernal, I don't say angels. I simply say beings that are much more evolved than us, because in the universe there could be beings who are 1 billion years more older than us. So no one knows what they could be able to do. If they're able to build up a computer, no local computer, using the quantum void to store information there and to allow everyone to transmit instantaneously all the data, well, this is technology. And it's a kind of unthinkable technology. And so I think that there is science behind this that we don't know yet. Practically with my book, my hyperspace book, I just wanted to launch the ball, just to provoke and see what happens. I think there is something true, I stress the fact that it's only a speculation. But intimately, I believe it's true.
Well, is there something in astrophysics that doesn't get talked about quite a bit, that's kind of like natural phenomena, or seems like it's natural phenomena? For instance, the double slit experiment gets talked about in regular physics with light and photons and things like that. And we've talked to Thomas Campbell, who's been on the show, and he's still doing experiments and has records of, through the Monroe Institute, of these conscious experiments that they've done together, and wrote a good book. But I wonder, because I've looked at Danny Wilton's work, who, he's a very good analyst, and he used a very large and detailed graph of the nebula of Orion versus some of the things that were on the Earth, and it was an exact match, like the mouth of the Nile and things like that. It exactly matched the nebula of Orion, and I always wondered how they knew these things. It seems as if the ancients knew something that we didn't. There's a lot of statues and things that imply that they did.
Well, clearly this is a coincidence. It doesn't deal with my field, which is just astrophysical or so. But there are some coincidences that are very strange. And your question is interesting, because we cannot exclude that the ancients, like Egyptians, but also the Celts, and other populations were able to interpret some visions in their mind, and so they all of a sudden started to learn something through the process I spoke about regarding my book. So I cannot exclude that their knowledge could have been induced by this mechanism of uploading, downloading of information, but I cannot confirm clearly. So it's interesting, this coincidence, but I cannot confirm, and I cannot add any information, because I'm not an archaeoastronomer, I'm not an archaeologist, so I cannot say anything about that.
Well, does it seem, through the study of what you do, based on what Thomas Campbell is saying, that he kind of believes what you're talking about too? That it's some type of conscious simulation that's going on that requires more entropy, right? That's what it wants. It almost like, and if I understand this correctly, almost like consciousness needs more entropy to interpret itself. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Well, I don't understand why entropy, because entropy is tendency to go towards a state of disorder.
Yeah.
And this regards the universe of matter. The universe of matter goes towards a state of entropy, clearly. In my model, I would say the opposite, a sort of syntropy. Practically, syntropy is not a concept that exists in physics.
Gotcha.
But the more the universe is learned by itself, by living beings, and learned by this kind of information through this process. And the more there is a sort of syntropy of consciousness, self-awareness of the universe, in such a way that maybe after some billion years, one real God would be born. I don't think there is any God in this universe, because this universe was born by chance, randomly, from the quantum void, and then all of a sudden there was the Big Bang. But this is a consequence of the Heisenberg indetermination principle. And then the universe was evolved, and the more it was evolving, and the more this mechanism grew itself, the database grew and more and more and more. But that is the brain, the consciousness of God, because if all together we create this thing, then we could create a God, and the God could come after us. So it could be the result of the technology that was discovered by chance by some very evolved civilization, and which allowed to do this marvelous hypothetical database, which is the only way to guarantee a syntropic and not entropic way to do so that the universe has a goal, and so that God is born, a real God is born.
Right.
So this is only my hypothesis. It's only an hypothesis.
I got you. And just to correct myself here, I had that backwards in my mind. I don't know why, because I read his book like twice. It's to reduce entropy. So it's pretty much what you're saying, right?
Yes.
The overachieving goal of consciousness is to reduce entropy, to create some type of order. But it does seem like to me that that consciousness wants to experience itself, and that you study astrophysics, so the things that are in astronomy, the space, the things of that nature, doesn't, I've said this on the show like quite a few times, and I feel it in my heart, and I guess that's a spiritual thing, who knows, but I feel like life is whatever is created the universe, that life could be the large goal, physical life, that it's doing everything in its power, geometrically, physically, you name it, probability wise, to create physical life so that consciousness can experience itself. It seems that way, or feels that way to me, but I know there's no science to prove this.
Well, there is not, but there is something that when you look at the physical universe, I mean, inanimate physical universe, you see that physical constants are set so that life is possible. So it seems that this universe has been created for life.
Right.
It seems to be a coincidence. And then we don't know yet what is physical life, but we know for instance, life can exist also beyond the chemistry of carbon. Carbon-based life form is what we know, but we are thinking about silicon. So life and then consciousness in it could exist also in other forms, maybe also in the form of a plasma. Because I remember there is a paper of 13 years ago, which was published by some physicists from Germany and from Russia on the New Journal of Physics, which says that plasmas, in particular conditions, when they interact with particles, create electrostatic effect in itself, which simulates the DNA identically, which is able to replicate. So life could exist also in the interstellar space as a plasma form. And maybe it tries life to exist also in the most difficult environment. For instance, there is a very recent news of the discovery, probable discovery, of microbial life Venus, at 60 kilometers high. There is a sort of niche where phosphine, it's a molecule that can be produced only by microbial life or by a laboratory. Clearly, there is no laboratory on Venus. So you see, life tries to find the to fit in also in the most difficult conditions. This happens probably also under the ice oceans of some the satellites like Ganymedes, like Titan, of the giant planets. We think there is life also there, which is a difficult conditions. And in the past, I think in Romania, there was a lot of there was no oxygen. There was something else. There was sulfur or something inside some caves. Insects were found at impossible conditions. It seems that life is fighting to exist, and not only on Earth, but everywhere. I don't know if it's a consciousness that is creating it or not, but it happens. The recent discovery about Venus opens a lot of perspective that life might be much more spread than we think. So this is what I feel to say.
Do you feel like that you have hope for people like SETI? Is there any type of technology that you can say now that's coming out that's given you hope that we can break some new ground here? Because honestly, it seems like that they've been talking about things like dark matter and changed their mind about it so many times. I wonder if we are making progress or if the field of astrophysics is just something that we're just barely scratching the surface here.
No, we know a lot of things in astrophysics. We have established a lot of things. We don't know yet what is dark matter, and we try to get it both from astrophysical systems and from nuclear physics. We don't know because there is a heavy component, a light component. We don't know which is which. So regarding dark matter and dark energy, we have no confirmation regarding the which is which, what exactly it is. But regarding many other things like mega black holes in the center of galaxies, about the cosmological evolution, about stellar evolution, planetary evolution, we know a lot of things that are established. Regarding SETI, the problem is this, that electromagnetic radiations diminishes with the inverse of the square of the distance. So the more we look far away, and the smaller and the weakest is the signal that we receive. So we can look only up to a certain distance, right, beyond which we cannot. But that's the reason why we are projecting radio telescopes whose diameter or aperture is the highest as possible, because the aperture makes so that the number of photons increases with the square of the diameter. So the more we increase the aperture, and the more we can look far away. So we will probably discover with SETI some intelligence with the new super radio telescopes, like the square kilometer array technology. And in addition to this, to very sensitive receiver and to very high frequency resolution spectrum analyzer. Namely, we are already using those. They are able to get something like 1 billion frequencies, okay, simultaneously. Wow. It's incredible. And so we would get it. The only biggest problem is to look more far away, because the more you expand the radius of the sphere where we are in the center, and the more the probability to find something from other intelligence increases. So we will, I'm sure, we will find something with SETI, which I support very much, probably using the so-called interferometers, which are systems of more telescopes that are working synchronously together, and they are so that they are like only one telescope with the diameter given by their separation. So if we are able, we are already using these interferometers in the radio waves, but if we with so we have like telescopes that have a diameter of 1,000 kilometer or more, but if we are able to put in space these systems, we can split this system million of kilometers away, millions, tenth of millions, million away, and the more is the separation, and the more we have a big telescope. So we increase the diameter of this telescope, and in that case, we can push our sight very far away, probably many million light years. In that case, we expand the radius, and I am sure we would find something with SETI. But I think we have to wait still at least 10 or 20 years to obtain a result. But we already have projects of space interferometers. So I am hopeful. This is standard astrophysics.
Well, that's fantastic, because that does give me a little bit of hope when it comes to that, too. Plus, you know, there's a lot of secret projects going on in space, and I'm not talking about, I'm just talking about some of the government and military stuff. I know there's, I have a good feeling about that, too, and to hear that, that's pretty cool, because I'm a big fan of SETI and what they do as well. I think they might actually discover something. Last question here before we got to let you go, and this has been a really cool interview. What do you think that, I don't know, it's kind of a random question, but I have a chance to ask, Oumuamua, what's the deal with that? Everybody keeps talking about that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Please tell me again.
Oumuamua was the cigar-shaped object that came into our solar system.
Oh, that one. Yeah. It's very interesting. And, they did, my colleagues did all the kind of acrobacies, mental acrobacies, to try to explain like an asteroid. But what I can say is that, first of all, it was not in the solar system, but it was coming from out of the solar system. So it was interstellar. It was something that stayed inside our system for a while, and went away. I don't know how such an elongated shape can be formed from an asteroid. We know that asteroids are almost always have asymmetric shapes, okay? But something that is something like it is 10 times longer than the width, I don't see physically a way to produce it. So I suspend my judgment. I see that, anyway, the Professor Loeb, who is an astrophysicist, has analyzed the possibility that this is artificial. And it's not impossible, because if you want to, for instance, if you are living on a planet whose star is about to become a supergiant, that planet would be completely burnt by the expansion of the external shell of the star. Okay, so they would be obliged to go away. And the best way to do that is to predict, with their technology, I think they could be able, that this catastrophe, and build huge arcs, and send them into space with a lot of embryos inside, driven by robots with microwave propulsion or matter-antimatter propulsion, which would be sent to other more systems, stellar system, where life is favorable. So it's not impossible, in my opinion, that someone sent something like that. But as I said, I suspend my judgment. Maybe we will discover a way to make an asteroid that is so elongated, but
it was weird, for sure. Yeah. It definitely was weird.
Yes. Unfortunately, it stayed so shortly in our solar system, so there was no time to send a spacecraft to look more close, unfortunately.
Well, we do got to wrap up. I really, really appreciate you coming on here. I didn't even mention your other books, as well as the fact that you're a best-selling author, and you also do electronic music too, which I absolutely love. I'm a big fan of. So yeah, maybe one day we can have you back and have another discussion down the road. Thank you.
I would like very much. Thank you very much for invitation, and have a nice time.
You too. You guys go check out the website, MassimoTeodorani.com. I'm going to put the links there. I'll drop it into the chat room. We have to go. The Secret Teachings is next. Thank you all. Thank you, Pacho, for making this happen. Love you, brother. Good night, y'all.